Hi, and welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a weekly podcast or fortnightly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Venson. Hello there, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
How are you doing? You good?
I'm good. Yes. I've got a new microphone, so it'll eventually be better. It might be a little less audio quality than the past ones, but we'll see.
Okay. You'll have to give us feedback, folks. And today we've got special guest Matthias Kessenholz with us. Hello, Matthias. How are you doing?
Hi, everyone. I'm doing very well, and I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm looking forward very much to this chat.
That's good. Thanks for coming on the show. You're nervous. I'm a bit nervous because you two are all wearing Django t-shirts and Django hoodies, and I forgot to dress for the show today. So,
yes, we'll have a link to the official Django merchandise in the show notes. But you're wearing the DjangoCon Europe hoodie, Matthias, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the virtual conferences, I think all their stuff is on there now as well as the default Django. So check it out.
There you are, a bit of Django swag. So Matthias, tell us about yourself. What's your backstory? How did you come to be on the podcast?
So I have started working with Django over 12 years ago now. I've worked with PHP previously, but I just enjoy working with Python and Django so much more. And the community of Django was also an important just pull factor for me to decide to start working with Django. It's just a framework I really like, and it's a community which taught me things which I probably wouldn't have learned otherwise. So that's great for me.
Once bit and never go back, no?
Yes.
Well, so then how did you get into PHP and just programming in general before that?
So I was always fascinated with handheld calculators, and I sold all my stuff as a kid when I was in seventh or sixth grade, I think, to buy myself a graphical calculator, an HP 8048. And I learned all about it back then, the programming and the mathematics, and I just enjoyed it so much to tinker around with this stuff. Later, I didn't want to stay in programming too much because I wanted to become an environmental scientist, and things got out of hand a bit because I got to know a few people and founded a political party with them. And then we also founded a company, which I'm still working at now. And I just thought it's more important to go into marketing and work for the good people than just go into climate science and find out once again that we should really change something, change how we live a bit maybe. And so that the programming was just a thing which I always enjoyed, but the mixture of programming and working for a good cause is at the end what brought me into web development. And I'm still here 15 years later.
Tell us about the company and the causes and the kind of projects you work on, because that sounds really interesting.
The company is Feinheit, and it is a company I founded with four or five friends 14 years ago now. And we did and do work for different companies, not only, but the things which motivated me most back then was just to go into campaigning and program campaigning pages. We did some work for the WWF and Greenpeace, and maybe for the Greens, and mainly for left-leaning political parties, or just for grassroots movements, NGOs, and so on. We're also doing work for other companies, but we have, so to say, a denial list of companies who we don't want to work for. So that's quite important, and that stayed with us over the years while people changed and the things we do did changed.
But that's really cool, because you're kind of like the web agency for social justice.
We try to do that, yes.
Well, and Torchbox also has a nonprofit focus as well, the do Wagtail. So
Well, I think it doesn't surprise me too much, because maybe Django also as a framework or as a community has a certain pull for people who want to do the right thing, because Django was one of the early mover with the code of conduct. Django was an early mover with the Django Girls, with all these initiatives to improve diversity and so on. I think that's probably a thing which possibly also puts off the bad guys maybe from working with Django, at least one could think so. But it's certainly a thing which keeps me here and so I'm not motivated to find other technology or the new stuff. I'd rather stay with Django, which is really stable and maybe a bit boring, but for us, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm going to fight you when you call it boring. I'm going to say it's super exciting, because it's exactly because it's stable and we can have the latest JSON fields and all the rest, and we can update the day it's released and know it's not going to break it. And I think, you know, that...
Let's not fight over that. Let's rather agree that boringness can be really exciting.
Yeah, no, totally. Before we move on, two things I want to say. But one was exactly... That feeling about the Django community. For years I was using Django. I never really got involved. I never went to Django cons, never went to conferences. And then I went to DjangoCon Europe in Florence. And, you know, the diversity mix. I'd been to other tech events where it's like, you know, one female. And a DjangoCon isn't like that at all. And the other was the range of topics where they're talking about, you know, diversity hiring and inclusion and, you know, cognitive biases and all these topics, which I hadn't really even thought about. And it was like, wow, I've been missing this so much. So that was the one thing. The other was Feinheit. In the notes here, you've got organized using a holacracy. What's that? I didn't...
Oh, that's the Zappos thing, right?
Yes, exactly. So
sorry to put an American spin on it.
No, I mean, the holacracy is an American thing. It was invented, I think, by Brian Robertson, who is an American entrepreneur. Holacracy is an operating system for a company. It specifies a set of rules how companies should work. And one of the important things about it is there should be no implicit expectation towards other employees. You try to make everything explicit, and you try to write all expectations down in roles, and then you can just energize these roles, or you can just give them away freely. So it is a way, it's not a completely flat structure, but it is in a way a flat structure where people have a little bit where power and responsibility is at the same level. So if you want more power, you have to take more responsibility. And if you can't have power without responsibility, and also you can't have responsibility without power, which are maybe the two things which are most problematic if you work in such an environment. I don't know whether you have worked at such a place anytime. I have, and it's really annoying. And holacracy sort of is one possible way of reinventing the organization structure. And it works really well for us, and I think people should have a close look at it. There are other ways to structure companies, and holacracy definitely isn't without fault, but for us it's working well.
Okay, interesting.
Well, I think there's quite a bit of self-selection in holacracies, or at least in my experience, even in startups in San Francisco. One thing I was surprised about is that I'm a self-starter. The founders of companies are self-starters, but not everyone who's smart and hardworking is a self-starter or wants that responsibility. Like, we had one very early employee in particular who the founder and I kept trying to give her room to take on responsibility and not be told what to do. And ultimately she ended up going to Twitter. She just wanted to be told, which was interesting, because I think before I'd assume that if you were hardworking and intelligent, you would want more autonomy. But her mind, and I think quite a few people's mind, don't fit into that. So that's sort of the culture of startups. One thing I learned after that is to really try to ask questions that get around, are you the type of person that does well in an unstructured environment? Which I think overlaps a little bit with Holacracy, where you take the initiative, but also you take the responsibility. It's not for everyone.
I think just one important difference for me is I was very surprised that our first employee that didn't want to join our ranks as well. So that he didn't want to buy shares. I couldn't believe it back then. These days, I understand it very well, especially when looking back to the type of company we were back then. But Holacracy still allows you to not have many responsibilities, but then you don't have much power either. And that may be fine for you. And also all these implicit expectations where other people, it's not implicit, it shouldn't be implicit, it should be very explicit, because if your former boss comes to you and expects a thing of you, you can't just say, well, I don't see this accountability anywhere in my roles. And then you can go into a governance meeting, which has a quite rigid structure as well. And then you can process this tension, how it's called in Holacracy. And there is just a way for everyone to, if you know for yourself what you need, then you can more or less get it. Or that's the idea. But of course, not everyone is the type who knows what they want, and that will be hard for them anyway. And yes, so we have a few problems, but maybe that's tangential now, I don't know. I have to think about that, especially when speaking English, what I want to say, I don't know.
No, but these sound like difficult problems in any organization, right? So it sounds like it gives you a good framework, or a framework for addressing the human interaction and the role interaction problems that come up in any organization.
To switch to tech, I want to note, so your first contribution was 2008, I believe, you put in the docs, which is 12 years ago.
I was surprised myself.
Could you talk about I know it's 12 years ago, but what was that process of, you were using Django, something came up and because Carlton and I spent a lot of time trying to encourage people to contribute to Django and make it less intimidating. But you just, was it a work problem you had, or what was the, if you recall, the specific issues? You say in the notes it was to do with your master's thesis.
Yeah, so I did a master's thesis on GIS-based regionalization of life cycle assessments. And we had, or I think we were using generic foreign keys quite a bit, or maybe it was standard foreign keys, I don't remember exactly. And it was just, if you have had several foreign keys pointing to the same model, the query, the SQL query engine got confused. And it was just an edge case I hit. And I think I just contributed a more or less detailed report, and the problem itself was fixed by someone else. The first problem, I think, where I really tried contributing a fix was a problem I encountered with the template language. And since I had been working maybe as a programmer for several years, and maybe Django was a little bit younger or even pre 1.0, maybe it was less intimidating back then, and I just went into the ticket tracker and proposed a patch. It wasn't the first open source contribution either, because I already contributed a few patches maybe to Git and to other projects. So it wasn't the first time I interacted with an open source project. But later on, I got maybe confused a bit myself with the Django contributing process and just the the standard for the stability, which is expected and which I also understand and like in the Django project, sometimes did make it hard to get the change merged, especially before the Fellows project. I mean, the Fellows project, that helped very much.
A lot of what the Fellows do is exactly this, taking a patch, reviewing it, you know, saying, hey, we need to change this. This will break backwards compatibility. We need test coverage here. But it can be a long process. You know, it's like two or three reviews to, you know, dot every I and cross every T on your patch to get it merged, which I understand could be frustrating. But I guess I always say to people, well, what's the other side? Is Django good? You know, when you download Django and you use it, do you trust that it's going to be of a high caliber? So I'm
yeah,
not sure.
I think the problem is less that, I mean, of course, there is the issue of code formatting or maybe of really minor, so-called minor problems, which are frustrating if there's a back and forth of them. But the problem a few years back was more one of you didn't even get any review. And for example, Jacob, one of the original authors of Django, I think they instituted this program where you could review 5 patches and then you had a guaranteed review of your own patch. But that didn't work really well either, for obvious reasons. But I mean, it was just a good try to fix this problem of the patch queue.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's still difficult. Like, you know, Maris and I are working, you know, Maris is full-time, I'm part-time, and we've still all the time got 20 plus patches on the list, plus, you know, 150 PRs that are at some stage of ready, not ready. You know, sometimes what is really helpful, you know, is people come along and they take 5-10 minutes out and they look at a PR and they say, hang on, this is not too bad, or this is okay, or this needs that. And it just bumps it forward and it enables it to pop over the out of the sea of pull requests, and it enables Maris or I to grab hold of it and say, okay, that one we can move forward. Sometimes the pull requests feel like a bit like a denial of service attack.
I tried doing that a few weeks ago, and then I noticed again and again that there are just so many issues which I don't see, because I haven't been working on this project as much as you have, for example. And that's just sometimes, I'm not sure, but there are times when I feel bad for accepting an issue or just reviewing a pull request and maybe leaving a positive message, and then you have to come and fix everything.
No, it's really, well, look, from my perspective, I believe Maris agrees, he'll, you know, text Twitter in if we've spoken wrongly for him, but it's really helpful to the Fellows for other contributors to do reviews or to triage a ticket. It just helps, you know. And if there's something that, you know, if you've got a PR and you think it's nearly ready and you mark it ready for check-in, Maris and I know that we can go and give it a review. And if it's not, we'll just bump it back. But if it really helps, you know, it really takes because the difficulty is that there are so many tickets, so many pull requests, is identifying the ones which you can make progress on quickly. So that does help. Two things I wanted to talk about. The two things you're known for, right? One is that you're part of Jazz Band, and the other is Fine CMS. Now, which do you want to talk about first?
maybe let's talk about Fine CMS first, because that was just chronologically, it comes so much earlier than my contributions to Jazz Band.
Okay. So tell us, what is Fine CMS? What's the elevator pitch?
The Fine CMS is a really small module on top of Django and the Django administration interface, which allows you to mix and match different content blocks, instead of having only the Django inline mechanism. For example, you can, if you want to have a page or a blog entry, you can add a rich text content block, and then you can add an image block, and then you can add a rich text block again, and so on and so on. And these content blocks are reusable plugins, and I mean, the interesting thing for me is just that there is that all of this should be reusable, not just for pages, but also for blog entries, for shop items. And it is more of a content management framework, maybe, than a content management system.
That's an important distinction. What would you say? Describe a content. So content management system we kind of can use to make pages, we could use to make blog posts. What's a content management framework? What do you mean when you say that?
If you work with WordPress, for example, you just have pages and blog posts and you have nothing else. And if you work with Django, you have this possibility of creating a model for each maybe a real world entity that you're working with. You can create a model for a person, you can create a model just for a project, and then you can create a model for some painting they did, and then you can create all these relations which connect these entities with each other. Also, that's what a really relational database is all about for me. And if you got to know that the power that you get when you structure your content well and all the automatizations you can make, you don't want to go back to structure your page content in the old way again, where you just have one big blob of rich text content maybe, but you want to reuse this structured content and pull it into this CMS. And many, maybe also Django-based, many CMS systems, they just offer you this list of features. And then when you want an additional feature, you're on your own. And FindCMS offers you these tools and building blocks to build a customized CMS yourself for every site, which okay. doesn't have all these fields and checkboxes, which you don't need at all.
And one thing I like about it is that it's very close to Django. It always feels like, you know, it's just Django.
Yeah, that was important for us, because at the beginning we just maintained this ourselves and we just wanted a really thin layer which reused almost all of Django, because we had so much success with the built-in or the bundled administration interface. We didn't need to educate people how to use it, and we didn't want to build our own administration interface. And then because if we did that, maybe it would be better for a moment. It probably wouldn't, but maybe it would be. And then we'd have to maintain this down the road. And we already did this a few years ago when still working with PHP. We had our own framework, we had our own CMS, and it was just so much work, all this maintenance, that we didn't have the time to do customer projects. And because
of this, you're so busy maintaining the CMS that you're not getting any actual work done.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, if that's just a toy project, then that works well. But once you start using it just on dozens of sites, you don't want to have all this maintenance burden.
Okay. So what are the big ideas with FindCMS? Because you've got the things that jump out for me, the content editor and the tree structure of the site very well. That's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. So let's take the tree structure. Tree queries and SQL databases don't tend to go too well together, right?
Yes, they don't. And when we started FindCMS in 2009, or I think it was 2009, I started searching for a management solution, and I found Django MPTT, the modified pre-order tree traversal, or In the literature, I think it's also called nested set, and it's just a way to add additional attributes to a model which should make querying a tree faster, where you don't have to, you have the root node, and then you have to fetch all the children, and then you have to fetch all the children of all the children, and that's really inefficient. Or it was really inefficient back then, and you don't want to do all this back and forth from Python to the database and then to Python again.
So what's the solution? Like, what? Because I've always tried to. So I've got to the stage in my old age where I'll just save everything as a flat, flat items without the tree structure, and then I'll serialize the tree structure separately, and just do an inquiry to fetch all the items and rearrange them, because I don't like going back to the database and fetching all the children of the children of the children. So how should I be doing that efficiently?
You should these days, if the tree isn't too big and if you don't know that you really need a different way to do it, you should just add one parent foreign key to each model, and then you should use recursive common tree expressions to fetch this data from the database. That's just a way to move the recursion which you need to build a tree into the database and not do it in Python, because the database is these days it's fast enough. And that was an idea I got actually from one of the guys. So I don't know his name, but it was a guy working on Discuss, because they said this, even at Discuss we are using common tree expressions to do this. They are fast enough, and they thought if it's good for Discuss, then it will work for us too.
Yeah, interesting. Because I mean, I guess in principle, a nested thread or a site structure could be infinitely deep, but it never really is, right? It's only 3-4 layers at most. And
yeah, and even if it is 10 layers deep, the database will be fast enough. If you're using Postgres or MySQL 8 or recent versions of MariaDB, they all understand this SQL construct, and that works really well.
Okay, and you have the tree editor in Fine, which sort of wraps all this up and gives us a nice UI for editing.
Yes, exactly. One of the problems you don't get when you use this tree queries CTE stuff, which you are prone to get with MPTT, is that MPTT has redundant values in the database and they are corrupted from time to time. And then you have to rebuild your tree structure, and that's really annoying. And I'm saying this as a heavy user of MPTT and also a co-maintainer. You can use it, and I won't drop it, but maybe if you don't need this performance, then maybe use something else which is normalized and where you do not have redundant values which are prone to break from every now and then.
Okay, interesting. So say I want to get going. I've listened to the podcast. I want to get started. What should I use? Because there's kind of two versions of Fine, right? There's version one, and then there's the newer version. Is what's your take there?
You should look at the FineCMS 3 suite of tools. You should look at and you should probably start with the FineCMS 3 documentation, which has a link to an example project which is really small, and you should be able to get it up and running in just a few steps or manual steps, and it's called FineCMS 3 example. And I think that's the best place to start. FineCMS 1 is just the old workhorse, and we will maintain this for years to come, I hope, especially because we have many or a few big projects which are depending on it. But it has a bit too much magic in it, and you really want to stay with FineCMS 3. It's simpler and has a better focus for what it wants to do.
Okay, and you wrote a post recently, which we'll link to in the show notes, on how FineCMS is still relevant now, because there's Wagtail, there's Django CMS, there's other things out there, but you were making the case for FineCMS in that post.
Oh, I should maybe rework that, because in my mind it's just FineCMS as a family of software projects, but I should really talk about FineCMS 3 then, or maybe I misunderstood you.
No, I was just saying it came back to my mind because you put up that post saying it was still relevant, and you know the one that a lot of people are using now is Wagtail. And one thing you brought out was the differences between Wagtail's approach and the approach that Fine takes.
So, I mean, FindSim has just 10 years ago or maybe 8 years ago, when people talked about Django-based CMSs, FindSim was almost always part of the list that was selected for comparisons. And these days it isn't, because it's just, it's niche, and maybe it's, or probably it's a bit unknown, which is probably also because I'm just not very good at marketing it. But in a way, also, it's just fine if it works for us and it's small enough to not be a burden for us regarding maintenance. But I would love if more people would just learn about these ideas, because, for example, Wagtail gained a stream field a few years ago. And this stream field, as far as I understand it, does exactly the same thing the FindSim as content editor does. And they started to use the same or a similar model too, but just several years later. And I mean, the Django CMS from Devio, which is a Zurich-based company too, by the way, I know the founders as well. They had a few of the same ideas as well, but they executed them differently, obviously. And they,
Okay. I mean, so one thing I'd say about it is that it's worth giving a go. If you've already got a Django app and you want to add on these content management or this content framework stuff, I find Fine is good for that, because it kind of integrates with what you've already got, rather than coming along and to replace. And that's for me, that's a nice selling feature. It's like you keep doing Django rather than replacing it with something else. But, you know, anyway, well, let's move on. Tell us about JazzBand as well, because JazzBand, what is JazzBand? So what sort of projects are part of it? Because there's lots of the classic third-party packages, right?
Yes, many of these packages were just developed by a few people for years and years, and they wanted to find a place probably to move, or when they wanted to leave the development to someone else, they had to find new maintainers previously, and JazzBand just offers a place now to move these projects to, and there is a community of people who are hopefully able to take up the bat and continue maintaining this project.
I think any given project doesn't necessarily take too much, but it's just that it's wearing, because there's a constant stream of incoming tickets, and then every new Django version you need to bump all the dependencies and you're a new release, and you know, these kind of jobs add up. And if it's just you by yourself, it can be
Yeah, and all of these projects, just they don't have this fellows system. Which is a pity. But yes, yeah, so the projects, the JazzBand projects where I'm doing much work, or the projects where I do the work I do, is mostly just Django debug toolbar.
Which is amazing, right?
Yes, it is. And I see my job. I looked at the commit statistics a few days ago, and I noticed that my contribution is mainly also in the place of, I'm mostly doing reviews and merges and releases. I don't write much code myself, but I got into maintaining this project because I wanted to upgrade to Django 1.10. where the middleware setting changed, and Django debug toolbar didn't support it back then. And JazzBand just offered me a way to jump in and just submit this feature or this fix myself. And the previous maintainers were maybe burned or bummed, I don't know, out by the responsibility around it. And I just thought, well, that maybe Django sometimes would be, as I said before, my quality standards maybe aren't well enough for Django, but there certainly are So I know Django debug toolbar quite well these days, and I think I can judge the pull requests, whether the quality is correct or not. And then I'll just throw out a new release. And it just feels really good just to be a part of something bigger. And that's what Jazz Band offers too.
That's super. I think it's a really good way to give a little bit back to the community. I always describe my experience of getting into open source where it was like, it was just like a hobby. I do, you know, a little bit here and there, just, you know, on Stack Overflow or on the GitHub tracker on Django REST framework. And then, you know, the danger is get this burnout thing. The danger is giving too much. So like any hobby, you know, if you were going to Tai Chi classes, you'd go on a Thursday night, you'd give it a couple of hours. You wouldn't do it, you know, 4 hours every day because that would be insane, right? So if you are going to get into open source, A, you know, bracket it, say, I'll give it a couple of hours a week. That's fine. And that's probably enough to contribute to a project. And then Jazz Band is an awesome way because there's debug toolbar, there's Django configurations, there's all sorts of awesome packages. I can't remember them. A community of people who are there to help you. You know, you can do a bit, they can do a bit, and it's not somebody on their own getting burnt out of the defense, maintaining the project they sweated over. So anyway, super. I'm all for that. Brilliant. Matthias, is there other stuff you want to talk about?
No, I really don't. I just think, well, don't feel afraid to try to contribute. And maybe it's enough to just jump into the ticket tracker and submit an issue or just submit a pull request. I think you like the experience.
We'd love to have you and welcoming you as we can be.
And I really hope the schools stay open, maybe. That's probably, oh, who knows?
Oh, that's a really 2020 issue,
yes,
right? We had it.
Are they open in,
meeting
in Switzerland? Sorry, Carlton, to interrupt.
Yes, they are open right now. But I mean, it looks really bad. We have, it's regarding the ratio, I think we overtook the US a few days ago, just the infection ratio, and I don't know how long this will go on. So,
yeah,
we were talking about wearing masks yesterday evening, maybe in the office. But I'd rather stay at home anyway, because it's just, I can work, do so much better work and concentrate more. As an introvert, I sort of like this, that now I can stay at home so much and go for a run instead of just drinking more coffee. So that's great for me.
Swings and roundabouts, no?
And even with the kids, they ask less questions than people in the office. But maybe you want to cut it out. That's not too bad.
No,
true.
we keep that in.
Or you keep it in.
Okay. So, right. Well, let's call it a day there. That's super. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes,
Matthias.
Thank you.
Folks at home, give FindCMS a try. It's an interesting platform.
Thank you.